As a way of honoring the gospel, let us stand. Today's reading is from the book of Matthew, chapter 10, verses 26 through 39. Don't be intimidated. Eventually, everything is going to be out in the open, and everyone will know how things really are. So don't hesitate to go public now. Don't be bluffed into silence by the threats of bullies. There's nothing they can do to your soul, your core being. Save your fear for God, who holds your entire life, body and soul, in His hands. What's the price of a pet canary? Some loose change, right? And God cares what happens to it even more than you do. He pays even greater attention to you, down to the last detail, even numbering the hairs on your head. So don't be intimidated by all this bully talk. You're worth more than a million canaries. Stand up for me against world opinion, and I'll stand up for you before my Father in heaven. If you turn tail and run, do you think I'll cover for you? Don't think I've come to make your life cozy. I've come to cut, make a sharp knife cut between son and father, daughter and mother, bride and mother-in-law. Cut through those cozy domestic arrangements and free you for God. Well-meaning family members can be your worst enemies. If you prefer father or mother over me, you don't deserve me. If you prefer son or daughter over me, you don't deserve me. If you don't go all the way with me, through thick and thin, you don't deserve me. If your first concern is to look after yourself, you'll never find yourself. But if you forget about yourself and look to me, you'll find both yourself and me. The word of the Lord.
I told Jeff that when I got up to this moment, I might actually pull a Jeff and stand here and look and smile at you all as he did on his very first Sunday here. I see the temptation now. You're a beautiful crowd. No. And as I look at you, I am filled with all of the memories of my ministry in this place. I'll begin with a story. Once upon a time, when I was about 10 or 11 or maybe 12, my mother offered me a beautiful cross necklace. Now, I had been raised in the church, but I was going through a very significant agnostic period. I didn't know what I believed. I thought I might be Jewish, but then that was just one of many phases. And I didn't know what I thought about that cross. I think I did know the historical significance of it, that it had been an instrument of torture and death and suffering. And so as far as I was concerned, it would be like having an electric chair around my neck. Otherwise, I didn't know what it meant to me, what it meant to the Christian faith. 10 years of church, and I still didn't know. I have a video clip to share that I think explores what it is about weaponry and battle language in our faith that sits so unwell with us. Let's go to the video for now.
Good one.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Hey, ladies. Sorry. You got a second?
Yeah.
Listen, I'm concerned about Mary. Something's going on.
Yeah, me too.
Well, she's part of your posse, and I think that you can help her. I'm going to need you to be a warrior out there on the front lines for Jesus.
You mean like shoot her?
No. I was thinking of something a little less gangsta. I need someone who's spiritually armed to help guide her back to her faith. The love and care that only Jesus can supply. You down with that?
Yeah, I'm down with that.
She's pretty vulnerable right now, so I'm going to need you to be extra gentle.
Into the flames of hell.
Yeah. You've become a magnet for sin. We've all witnessed it.
Yes. Sure. Veronica acting all pure. What about last spring break at the Promise Makers rally, huh?
Oh my God, you are making accusations.
As we're trying to save your soul. Mary, turn away from Satan. Jesus, he loves you.
You don't know the first thing about love.
I am filled with Christ's love.
God.
You are just jealous of my success in the Lord.
This is not a weapon, you idiot.
Oh. Folks, this is pretty heavy. Especially our version of it right here. Its emotional weight and its spiritual weight is even greater than its physical weight. Can you imagine throwing this at someone? The original text for this morning, in the New Revised Standard Version, Jesus says, "I have come to bring not peace, but a sword." I think out of all of the many troubling verses in this collection of his sayings that were probably not said all in one sitting, but collected and then written together, that might be the one that troubles me the most. Jesus says, "I've come to bring not peace, but a sword." See, I'm used to biblical scholarship where I can analyze whether someone is translating correctly or interpreting in a spiritual manner. But for Jesus to say, now I'm confronted with a weapon that I did not expect. And it got me to thinking, how are the symbols of our faith sometimes used as weapons? Recently, this year, one of our nation's politicians said that, I don't know if you can see this baptismal font over here, waterboarding is how we baptize terrorists. And that has stayed with me because one of my most precious memories of my ministry here was assisting in the baptisms of some of our infants. And I don't know what it means to me that the sacred act that made us family is being compared to waterboarding. I don't know. I don't know what that means. When we celebrate communion at the table, there are times that not everyone is welcome. There are churches where I have not been welcome. Does that make it a weapon, or does that just mean that there's a conversation that needs to happen about what it means to us as Christians? And to be fair, I've also been to churches where I have refused communion. After hearing that book become a weapon in my own eyes, Jesus has constantly created for us new meanings in everyday symbols where we might not expect them. I have told Craig before, there you are, that he and I, and many like us, are meaning makers. We like to look for meaning in symbols, make meaning out of our experiences. I have shared with you a recent experience that I believe I need to elaborate on because I haven't given you the fullest meaning that God gave to me Most of you know that I experienced a dark night of the soul during my time at seminary. Seminarians love to tell the story of how they got called to seminary, but I don't know if enough of us tell the story of what happened once we got there. If ever there were a battlefield in education, seminary is that battlefield. I went on the cross-cultural trip to Turkey. And while there, my class attended a service in Antioch, one of the earliest Christian cities. It was a Catholic church. And as we gathered there, it was wonderful to participate in this service because it was Pentecost, and certainly it was the miracle of Pentecost. We didn't always understand what they were saying until our translator translated from Turkish to English, but every once in a while you could get a hint. There were children sitting across the room from one another, and somewhere about halfway in the service, they were rubbing their stomachs. Oh, they were hungry. We could tell what that meant. It was beautiful to find common languages there. And then, near the end, the priest came around and offered everyone communion. Every Protestant in that room received communion in this Catholic church. You see, in Turkey, Christianity is not the prevalent religion. And from this priest's standpoint, we are all Christians, and it didn't matter what denomination we were. And honestly, for many of my classmates who had been in the Catholic Church, many of them who had been struggling with the Catholic Church, this was the transformation of a symbol. Because for them, that communion had been a weapon in the past, and here they were receiving it fully. For me, it made me confront something. You see, I had been prejudiced against the Catholic Church for much of my childhood without actually really knowing it. My family did nothing to inspire this in me, except that we were Protestants, and the only history lesson I ever got was the Protestant Reformation, so we're the new and improved version. But in college, my best friend had been Catholic, and something had transformed in me that I didn't even realize the power of it until that moment, because there I was, not yet having received and realized God had done something amazing, that I was already somehow in communion with people that 5 years before I would not have been. Now, this is right in the middle of this very long experience of not hearing God. But in that moment, I did. I heard a prayer that I had prayed a few years before without even knowing it. Again, as a mainline Protestant who didn't even realize her own biases just by being raised in a certain way, I had said, "Oh, God, please don't make me love the evangelicals. I am so embarrassed to say that out loud. I really, really am. And I say it because it reveals the power and the glory and the mercy of God. Because in that moment, I finally got a reply. I'm not going to make you. I'm going to let you." You see, God revealed to my heart what God had already done, this beautiful miracle of grace given to me and that I had given to others, and then God revealed the promise of what was still to come, right there in the middle of the dark night of the soul. God speaks up sometimes when God really has something that needs to be very clear, and I'm so glad that God did that time. You see, the peace that I think Jesus is bringing and talking about in this passage. Jesus did not come to let us be satisfied with the way that things are. Jesus did not come to give us peace in the status quo. let me share something with you that was written on a blog by someone who goes by the pen name Sparky. Speaking out for the marginalized peoples of our society. Silence supports the status quo. Our peace, that is, the people who are oppressed and persecuted and hurt, marginalized, our peace, our refusing to make waves, ensures that the world will continue as it is. And as it is oppressive, prejudiced, bigoted, and deeply unjust. It is hurting us, and we need to speak to stop that. You stop us fighting, and you help those attacking us and holding us down. You want a quiet life, I get that. But the cost of that quiet life is us shutting up and taking it, or smiling and saying thank you as we're abused. You want to keep everything nice and peaceful. But it's not peaceful for us. You're so invested in peace and quiet that you've lost sight of right and wrong. And a polite, soft-spoken bigot is still a bigot. Oppressive people who smile nicely, say please and thank you, and use coasters are still oppressive people. Jesus came to bring not peace, but a sword. Jesus came to challenge the symbols that we have held dear, the way that we have been raised, our domestic stability, the safety of being raised in a family faith, and challenged us to reach out farther than we could have imagined. If you'd pray for God to lead you on the journey, be prepared to make some detours. If you pray for mercy, be prepared for opportunities to be merciful. I have one more video to share with you this morning, one that I think transforms one more symbol of our faith. Can anyone just tell me what your association with this is? Yeah, Owen? It's a fishing net. And what do you think of spiritually, anyone? When you think of a fishing net, when do we usually bring these out and talk about them? Fishers of men. Yeah, fishers of men, fishers of people. What it means to be a disciple, which is very much what this passage is about. Lay down yourself, take up the cross. What it means to be a disciple. And so this video will put this net in a new context.
On Valentine's Day, while plying the waters of the Sea of Cortez, I came upon a young humpback whale that appeared to be dead. We floated next to the whale for several minutes, but we saw no signs of life. Suddenly, the whale rose slightly in the water and forcefully exhaled. The whale was severely entangled in a gill net of the type used by local fishermen. The tail was entangled in so much gear it was weighted down a full 15 feet below the surface. Both pectoral fins were pinned to the side of its body, and the nylon gill net went all the way up the whale's back, forward of the dorsal fin. I came back aboard and we pulled and cut the net as fast as we could. We were maneuvering the boat into proper position with a paddle and only had one small knife, but after great effort managed to free one of the pectoral fins. Sensing a spark of freedom, the young whale started to swim, taking us on a Nantucket sleigh ride through the Sea of Cortez for about a half of a mile.
We're trying.
I'm being taken for a ride by a whale.
You good, you're good. Make sure none of us are entangled.
The whale eventually tired and came back up right underneath us. We continued to grab more and more net and haul and cut, and after nearly a half hour, the other pectoral fin came mostly free.
Otherwise, the preacher said,
and when the whale tired, we began cutting the net off the powerful tail fluke.
I got it. I think you might need to cut it and let her go with it.
Finally, after about an hour of exhausting work, we decided we had enough net aboard to make the final cut. We were hoping enough net was off the fluke to free her.
Tail is free, the tail is free. Okay, cut. Keep going. Come on, keep going. It's old. So close.
She slowly swam away, but about 500 feet from our boat, she breached high into the air. I cleared all the net from underneath the boat, and we headed off, five tired but exhilarated people with a boatload of nylon net.
Free! Free to live life.
Yeah. For the next hour, she provided us with an incredible full surface display. We saw at least 40 breaches, as well as tail lobs, tail slaps, and pectoral fin slaps. We all believed it was at least a show of pure joy, if not thanks.
Mommy, I know what she's doing.
What is she doing,
she's
hon?
She's showing us that she's all free.
Yeah.
We followed her for about 4 miles over the next hour and said goodbye. Needless to say, we were all proud and thrilled that we saved this fantastic young life. It was an incredible experience that none of us will ever forget.
I think my absolute favorite part of that video is when little child on the boat, after this very long and tiring and exhausting mission, says, "Mommy, I know what she's saying. She's saying that she's free." That child is going to be raised knowing what freedom looks like. A new image of salvation. You see, we have technical difficulty, really. Okay. A net and a knife. One small knife they did that salvation work with. Which is the weapon and which is the symbol of freedom and salvation? It depends where you are and what God is calling you to do in that moment. But the point is that it is a conversation that we must continue to have with God constantly, because we cannot rely on just knowing one symbol's meaning. We must reflect on them in the presence of God and in the promise of God. And for the record, I'm okay with crosses now, because it has become salvation, not a weapon. May it be so for you as well. Amen.